You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Game Scoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis,
Scoop.
Sam Claiborne,
Fanny Pack or Bum Bag,
and Andrew Goldfarb.
Hello.
And we've got a great show for you this week. We're going to talk about Super Mario games.
Oh, mm-hmm. Those are my favorite Mario games.
I know. They're some of the best Mario games ever made. We're going to talk about some 8-bit adventures that are getting new life on current platforms. But first,
oh,
bummer news today, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm a little bit fired up. I don't mind telling you. Electronic Arts has announced it is shutting down Visceral Games, developer of Dead Spaces. But perhaps more importantly for us today, the forthcoming Star Wars game, the single-player, narrative-driven Star Wars game that they've been working on for over 4 years.
Whoa, really?
They're shutting down that studio, and EA is now pivoting the development of that game, moving it to a whole other studio. Sounds like they're going to be turning it into a games-as-service Destiny-like.
Destiny-esque, or...
They just like barely don't come out and say that, but they're talking about like market research. Like they put up a blog post that made it pretty clear that they don't want Uncharted, they want Destiny.
And it's also, we should say, as we're recording this, this is like breaking news.
Yep.
So, there's more to come, I'm sure.
Yeah, this is what we know so far.
I wrote a poem about it. Already? Here I sit, brokenhearted. They canceled the Star Wars game like Uncharted.
Wow.
That's really good.
Really good.
Yeah, I saw it's half of a rhyme I read on a bathroom wall. If you guys know that one.
So
that's weird. The bathroom wall had the thing about the Star Wars game that was like Uncharted.
So your two-line poem needs to come with a disclaimer, like inspired by this bathroom wall writing.
Yeah.
That I saw one time.
Disclosure, Mitch Dyer, currently working a Star Wars game, wrote this bathroom poem.
EA Worldwide Studios Executive Vice President Patrick Sutherland released this statement about this game, which is now indefinitely delayed. He said, in its current form, it was shaping up to be a story-based linear adventure game.
God forbid.
Yeah.
That's the game, right?
That's exactly what we want to play. That's the game we want to play.
And it's even weirder because even before all of this was Star Wars 1313. So it's like, it's just pouring salt on the wound because, like, this was the successor to 1313.
Well, sure. You were the chosen one.
Like, that statement is so odd to me because it makes it sound like, you know, this giant team has been tinkering away for years. And then one day they're like, what? This is what you've been making? Like, a studio that makes single-player action-adventure games was assigned the task of making a single-player Star Wars action-adventure game, and then lo and behold, it turns out it was shaping up to be a single player.
Can't they just add loot boxes and they'll be fine?
Yeah.
Of all the negatives you could, you know, cite about a game that's been long in development, that it's like it's directionless, you know, it just turned out to be not much fun, or it's just a little too generic. It's like all these things. No, they just say it's a single player adventure game. Like, what?
I mean, I think the weird unwritten news here is, what does this mean for Respawn's single player Star Wars game that they quietly announced and then nothing's come of it? And then the second part is, what does this mean for Anthem? Because BioWare is having its own trouble, and seems to have, like, they got rid of the team that worked on Andromeda, and BioWare is getting smaller and smaller. Obviously, there's some kind of Dragon Age project in the works, but like, I'm curious if this means that Anthem quietly just its tech goes into this instead.
Yeah, is there room for one publisher to have two big AAA games as services, two big Destinies out at the same time?
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense.
It's weird. I EA's in a weird spot right now because I think
does Anthem become this game, or do they share?
I don't know. Like, I feel like the BioWare name right now is not as strong as it was. So I don't know. I think the next 3 or 4 years for EA are going to be really interesting because like, they announced a lot of Star Wars games all at once, and we haven't actually seen many of them come out.
Yeah, we were talking about, I unfortunately didn't get a chance to look up the details before we came into Scoop, but I think EA's Star Wars deal is 10 years. Like not like they get to make Star Wars games forever. They get to make them for 10 years. And that was like 3 years ago that they signed that deal. Like Galaxy of Heroes on mobile is a massive, tremendous hit that's made many, many tens or hundreds of millions of dollars. So, you know, they're doing all right, but even so, like, it doesn't feel like that Star Wars license is going well for them.
Yeah, let me finish.
Battlefront's a big hint too.
Let me relay the complete statement from Patrick Sutherland of EA. He says, in its current form, it was shaping up to be a story-based linear adventure game. Throughout the development process, we have been testing the game concept with players, listening to the feedback about what and how they want to play, and closely tracking fundamental shifts in the marketplace. It has become clear that to deliver an experience that players will want to come back to and enjoy for a long time to come, we needed to pivot the design. We will maintain the stunning visuals, authenticity in the Star Wars universe, and focus on bringing a Star Wars story to life. Importantly, we are shifting the game to be a broader experience that allows for more variety and player agency, leaning into the capabilities of our Frostbite engine and reimagining central elements of the game to give players a Star Wars adventure of greater depth and breadth to explore.
I mean, that all just screams it's a Destiny. Like, you know, that's at least what I read from that statement.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, player agency means less Uncharted-like. You know, more player agency has more control over where you go and what you do.
Mm-hmm. But, like, well, Battlefront's already a big multiplayer game.
Exactly.
So how is this going to distinguish itself from it? Will it be a multiplayer game with these exact Destiny-style missions?
Yeah.
I mean, yes. I think every publisher wants that right now. I mean, like, I think, like, Activision obviously has
MMO
that with Destiny.
With a shooter.
I think EA wants that sooner rather than later. You know, they want their Destiny. I think every publisher right now is kind of looking around. I mean, Take-Two kind of has it with GTA Online in a weird way where that's not quite the same thing, but it's like it's become their cash cow, and I would imagine Red Dead has a very similar online mode.
Yeah, I mean, everyone jokes about, or like GTA comes up. It was the second best-selling game last month, right? Five years old. And everyone says, everyone points to that's what happens when you let a team take as long as they want and make the game that they want and don't compromise on price, but that's not really true. Like, it was the number two best-selling game because of GTA Online, you know, not because of the strength of its 5-year-old campaign. Yeah. I mean, it certainly doesn't hurt it, but that GTA Online, as sort of primitive as it was, or you know, by today's standards, 5 years ago it was revolutionary. Like, that's what sustained that game's life. So I don't know. I don't feel like it needs to be baked into the DNA of the game, Destiny style, to keep your game at the, you know, in the top 10 charts every month and keep people playing your game and, you know, buying microtransactions in it. Like, it can be a separate experience to me. Like,
yeah, and I think the most interesting and most telling part of all of this is that Amy Hennig's name does not appear anywhere in that post, and the statement we got from EA is that they're in talks with her about if she'll continue, but, like, none of that sounds good. Like, to me, that means they're just taking away the narrative focus from whatever.
She designs games that are amazing in that one sentence description type category.
Yeah.
Which is story based linear adventure games.
Yeah.
That's exactly what she does.
Yeah.
Maybe
she can. The best in the world at it, for my money.
Yeah.
I think she's just amazing at what she does.
I mean, she's so amazing, so talented that she'd almost be like wasted on this, but my dream is that, like, she goes back to Legacy of Kain.
Yeah.
Which is like such a step down, you know, like career wise. But, like, those games were so amazing when she was working on them. And so selfishly, like, I think that would be really
it's like, also, like, I mean, it becomes this competitive thing where, like, this will mean, like, if she moves on from EA after this, like, if this leads to Amy Hennig departing EA, that means it's been a very long time since she shipped a game. It would be since Uncharted 3. So I'm just really, like, I think she, I totally agree with you, Sam. Like, I think she's brilliant.
10 years, right?
Yeah.
A couple years away from that being 10 years old?
Crazy. Uncharted 3 was, what, 2011?
Oh,
no. Or 2012.
Yeah,
2012, right.
I have Uncharted 2.
But still, I mean, by the time a new game begins production, it would come up on 10 years probably. I mean, that's what's fascinating about this is if EA Vancouver is now starting a Star Wars game in the vein of Destiny, and if it isn't a continuation of what Visceral was doing, if it's a new game that they're starting now, by the time that thing comes out, like, who even knows if the Destiny fad will be popular?
So I said this game has been in development over 4 years. And as part of the statement today, they said, while we had originally expected this game to launch late in our fiscal year 2019... which would end in March of 2019. We're now looking at a new time frame that we will announce in the future. So it's like...
That means 2020, fiscal 2021, probably?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We're talking about the next decade that this game will be released in.
Yeah.
What a bummer.
So it's easy to be alarmist, especially for someone like me who prefers single-player games, and I love Star Wars. But let's not forget, we have gotten some of the best single-player experiences of all time just this year. Right, with Breath of the Wild, with Horizon Zero Dawn. I know Sam and I are really enjoying Shadow of War. Justin, not so much, but I like
Persona 5.
Persona 5 is a single-player experience. Well, it's not like there are no more single-player games.
Shadow of War is a have-your-cake-and-eat-it-too situation, which we can talk about a little bit more.
It may mean that a bunch of people looked at their expenses and were like, hey, these are the games that are costing us the most money. But at the same time, like, we kind of set ourselves up for trouble here because last week we're all like, no loot boxes, no DLC that's meaningless, and all this stuff. So maybe, like, this is kind of a reaction to that on the publisher side, where it's like, if we can't sell these things with single-player games, we're going to sell them anyway because we're going to make different games.
Wait, you said no loot boxes? Okay, we're canceling Star Wars and we're going to fill the game with loot boxes.
Oh, and I mean, that's the crazy thing is, like, if you make an Uncharted-style game, you're looking at, like, 5 million units. If you can make a successful Destiny game, maybe you still only sell those 5 million units, but then people are continuing to pour time and money into it for 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah, you get 250,000 people that are willing to give you, you know, $80 a year in, you know, GTA cash.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I wonder. I have a theory. EA in particular has struggled as of late with its single player games. Mm-hmm. Mass Effect Andromeda. Titanfall 2 was great, but it didn't, like, match the sales expectations they were going for.
That's absolutely a multiplayer-centric game.
Last year, they also had Mirror's Edge, too. So I wonder if this is just EA seeing, you know, we're struggling with our single-player efforts.
And especially
double down on our multiplayer.
But that game's 4 years in development, too. It's like, man, just finish it and put it out, and then revisit it.
Well, and it's also, like you said, like why would they hire Visceral, and why would they hire Amy Hennig to do this project if that's not what they wanted?
That statement that it makes them sound so surprised that this project was shaping up to be, I'm like, what are you talking about? Like,
yeah.
I'm fascinated to see what this means for Respawn. I really am. I really wonder if their game now just gets canceled or if it if it just becomes this game. And also, EA Vancouver, such an interesting pick because that's like where, when I think EA Vancouver, I think sports, like that's FIFA, that's NHL, like that team.
Oh, really?
Like they made a Need for Speed game. Like they're just not, that's not like a powerhouse that I would think of for Star Wars. It's a major EA hub, but they're not this.
Multiplayer though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, it's tough. The business of making games is very, very challenging. The name of the game is do whatever you can to stop people from trading in your game. Like, if you sell someone a game and you're a game publisher, you have to get them to hold on to that game for, like, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks at least. Because otherwise, every copy that's traded in and sold used is a copy that you don't get any credit for.
In the launch window, yeah.
And so, you know, that's where, like, a game like Destiny is that taken to the extreme of, like, you know, there's dozens of reasons to hold on to that game for weeks and months. But even other games with, you know, free DLC, like educational mode coming to Assassin's Creed, you know, post-launch, that's not always, you know, and I'm not accusing Ubisoft of anything, but that's not always just because, oh, it's not quite done. They need another week or two to polish it. But, like, there's these deliberate drops of content to keep you holding on to your game and keep it the value of it increasing for you over time.
I really wonder what this means for Battlefront 2's campaign. Like, we haven't, that game is very soon, and like people want, like John Boyega famously tweeted, like, I wish this game had single player, and they did it. And so now I'm like, is that campaign the Star Wars campaign we've been waiting for, or does EA just want that to be a multiplayer game with a few hours of single player in it? Like, I'm really, if EA is leaning away from single player games, it's going to be really interesting watching what happens to a lot of their franchises, not even just Star Wars.
Yeah, the fact that they've shown us so little of the campaign makes me guess it's probably on the shorter side.
Yeah, I agree. And Battlefield's campaigns normally are too.
Yeah.
It's so fascinating to me that out of all the big, you know, powerhouse publishers, that Ubisoft is the example of, like, they have a stable of games as a service, like Division was so-so. But, you know, they launched a game and that was the product they wanted to make. But they also do single-player games and they also do kind of hybrid games that are, like, single-player but also have, like, interesting online interactions. And
And they have really long tails. Like, For Honor is hitting, I think, its third season of content. And, like, Rainbow Six Siege has so many new operators still coming.
Games that launched in a so-so state but they stuck with and then, you know, the audience rewarded them. You know, out of all the publishers, they're the one that really seems to understand, you know. But then you have games like Rabbids that are, like, we're just going to make a great offline experience.
Yeah, for sure.
My favorite irony in all of this is that at E3, EA announced single-player campaigns for all their sports games. So, like, Madden has that really cool, like, Friday Night Lights style mode, and, like, FIFA brought back the Journey. And it's so funny that, like, those games get single-player and Star Wars can't.
Where does Dead Space go from here?
Well,
it's dead. I mean,
I was also going to point out, sad to see Visceral close, because they did. Dead Space 1 and 2 are both really, really good, I think. But then they were kind of, I mean, Dead Space 3 was, for me, a little bit ruined with, you know, kind of funky new game mechanics that didn't need to be in there at all.
You also hit that weird, like, Modern Warfare Titanfall thing where, like, a lot of the Dead Space team has actually moved on and they're at Sledgehammer, and so you don't really have the core team there anymore anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the Visceral, we should point out that that studio closing means many, many lost jobs. Yeah. And EA says that they're going to, you know, relocate and redistribute people throughout the org as they can, but it's super super sad to see, you know, any big AAA studio like that close. Like, that is developers out of work.
Yep. Dead Space was such a good, like, Resident Evil 4 follow-up.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's they clearly love that game. I love that game. And they, like, took it to space and limited your resources and had the same kind of feel to the combat. Like, just to eulogize that game for a second, it was a blast.
I love Dead Space.
Yeah, I agree.
And that team was super talented. And I think they were maybe excited to make Dead Space 2 because that got even better. But I think there was a lot less excitement around Dead Space
3. Was just more action than less horror, I think.
The crafting stuff was cool, but that was...
The last game Visceral shipped was Battlefield Hardline, a game that people easily forget about, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And Visceral also did Dante's Inferno, which I think is a totally average game, but just, like, it's a very interesting note in video game history, the whole, like, controversy. And
there's a cliffhanger at the end, so we'll never know what happened.
The publicity around that game.
Hardline was another one where they tried to do a cinematic, like, movie-style campaign.
Which one?
Battlefield Hardline.
Hardline.
I just had never thought about Visceral's history pre-Dead Space. I just don't ever...
They were EA Redwood Shores.
I was going to say
they've been around for many years, but after the success of Dead Space, I think they rebranded them as Visceral.
I can see elements of Dante's Inferno in Dead Space. Like, there's a big boss that's gluttony. It's just this, like, this pile of flesh that's, like, walking around. And, like, that's exactly what those, like, what are they called? Necromorphs?
Yeah,
I think so.
Good stuff.
Anyway, bummer news, but we will continue following any new developments in the Visceral shutdown and whatever this Star Wars game ends up being. Now, in happier news, in just 2 weeks, we will be getting a new Super Mario game.
Oh, boy.
Yay.
You guys.
Mamma mia.
Ready.
I have to finish all these other games first.
It's been a long time. I mean, 3D World didn't do it for me, so.
I loved 3D World,
really?
Too.
I think 3D World's amazing.
I like them all.
Well, it's funny you bring up these other Super Mario games because the folks at Metacritic actually ranked every Super Mario game based on its review score. And I think it's an interesting list that we can...
What about Super Mario Land game?
So there's,
they can't go back to NES though, right?
They do go back to NES, yeah. Whatever reviews they're scrounging up for those early games.
Yeah.
What, just from like the like Denver Gazette?
Yeah, there was one outlet that reviewed it.
No, because basically every modern outlet re-reviewed it when it came to Virtual Console. So you have IGN and GameSpot reviews for those early games. So there's been 20 Super Mario games. And there's a tie for 19th place.
Okay.
What do you think the bottom?
Wait, they're all Super Mario something?
Yeah, Super Mario something. Yeah. So the bottom two games are tied.
And the new Super Mario Brothers are in there?
And I'll tell you the score is 77. So that's like the
all right.
New Super Mario
bottom's
Brothers
gotta
2
be New Super Mario Brothers 2.
No, I think bottom's gotta be
I like
no, I feel like
lost levels.
Ooh, yeah.
Well, because that's like, the worst Mario game. Like, I don't know the Metacritic reviewing old games.
Justin's right. So it's Lost Levels and New Super Luigi U.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that.
Which was really good.
Yeah.
But I think it got dinged for just being like, you know, DLC or whatever.
Those are the bottom ranked Super Mario games. But, you know, out of 20 games, if the worst you ever did was pretty good.
Yeah. Like almost great. Yeah.
I don't think Lost Levels is pretty good.
I want to come to Luigi U's defense here. I don't know. Cool. I mean, I understand, like, if someone just said, oh, it's unnecessary DLC and you don't need to get it, you know, 7.5 out of 10. Like, fair enough. But, like, it's really clever DLC. It takes existing levels and makes them a lot harder, and you play them in a different way. I don't know.
I think
it was about collecting three things instead of just getting through the level.
I think ultimately, like the original DS New Super Mario Brothers is amazing. Mm-hmm. And the Wii one with like the bubbles and the multiplayer stuff was amazing. But once they got to the Wii U version and the Luigi U and the 3DS one, it was just too many.
I have a hard time. So there's four, maybe we're just going to get through this, but there's four new Super Mario Brothers and then there's DLC.
Yeah.
And I actually I conflate them in my head. I get them mixed up.
There's more than that.
No, there's two on DS, one on Wii, one on Wii U, right?
No, there's DS, Wii, Wii U, and 3DS.
Oh, that's what I meant. Two handheld and two.
3DS.
Yeah. The 3DS one's bad.
So hold on.
Yeah.
The 3DS one's the bad one.
Yeah. In 17th place is New Super Mario Bros. 2 for 3DS.
Is that the coin with the collecting
million coins? Yeah, all the
that's
gold.
That's one I didn't even. That's the only like core Mario game.
That
I've
one's
never
super
bought.
Cool. It has these like downloadable levels that are based in Super Mario Bros. 3 land. Ooh. And they're only like run. I think they're like you have to run through them. It's really fun.
Well, I mean,
love
it. It's exactly what Dan was saying. It's like it's a bad Mario game. It's still a really good game. But it's like that game is just like it was the fourth time they had done that same formula. It's not super exciting anymore.
Well, it's crazy. Like Mario was one of those things like Zelda where I can't believe that more people don't try to copy it. Like there's not that many people just making straight up platformers. Like everyone
super
always
lucky
does
still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everyone does like platformers with a twist or like it's like this, but they put some spin on it. Like I think that Mario is just in this unassailable position where like Nintendo's so dominant that no one except maybe Rayman wants to try to make a traditional platformer.
Number tied for 17th place, with also 78, is Super Mario Land for the Game Boy.
Mm. I like that game.
The original Mario Land. I like that game. It's got those weird tiny sprites. And
so tiny. But it has a shooter between every platformer level.
Yeah. And it takes place it takes place on Earth, not in the Mushroom Kingdom, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's I feel like Daisy. The land games are like all over the place. Like those are like that's like the weird like non. It's like the Zelda CDI games where you just kind of forget about them.
Well, all the Zelda handheld games are the same way. They're really kooky. Yeah. Like Link to the Past is, or I mean, Link's Awakening.
Started the trend. Of, like Yoshi's in it.
Yeah, because Link's Awakening, and that's true. And you can steal stuff from the shop and everything.
The person that fell in love with a goat.
Getting into the '80s, number 16 would be Super Mario Land 2, 6 golden coins. Mm-hmm. That has an 80.
Yeah.
15 would be Super Mario Brothers 2. The second one on NES. That has an 81. Lucas M.
Thomas. I'm just
going
to turn this on its head. That's the best one. It's the best Mario game.
Lucas M. Thomas of IGN says, the American Mario 2 is still a lot of fun and it inspired several aspects of future Super Mario titles.
The history of Mario, you know, obviously everyone knows this was Doki Doki Panic in Japan and then was brought over, you know, was reskinned as a Mario game for the U.S., which... Two things. One, I've never played Doki Doki Panic. Like, I'm really curious about how it's different or how...
It's like an Arabian-themed game.
Yeah, like, because they did...
Mostly just a reskin now.
Well, because for years, I thought that they just swapped out the characters and put in Mario characters, but there's not. It's different.
Yeah,
the jump physics are different and stuff,
The game's remixed, so I'm really curious to go back and play Doki Doki someday.
Yeah.
But I also think it's interesting that, you know, Shy Guys and other parts of that game have carried on through the decades, but were introduced in this American, like, reskin. It's crazy. It's really cool.
I think when that game came out, it was probably the best game in the world.
Probably.
Super Mario Brothers 2.
Well,
it just got trounced after it. I mean, game was incredible. I couldn't have been more excited about a game. It was so perfect in every way. But we didn't know that there was going to be games that were even better.
All right, 14 is New Super Mario Bros. U. That has an 84.
I thought you already named that one.
No, I read the quote out too early.
Mm.
Number 13 is the original Super Mario Brothers. That has an 86. Wow. Mm-hmm. So do you think the original Super Mario Brothers is like right in the middle of all the Super Mario games?
It's just how argument. You rank them, you know?
Yeah, it's this argument we have every time we ever do a list, which is like... Yeah. Are Pokemon Red and Blue the ones you pick, or like Mario Galaxy 1, or do you pick the ones that came later that couldn't have existed without?
Do you measure them by in the era in which they came out, by, you know, 2017 standards? What people need to understand about Mario 1 is that when that game came out, like Pitfall was like the stand, like you jump and go, and like it was single screen and like clunky and terrible, and like Mario was so smooth and had these big scrolling levels and had secrets and you could jump above the stage, and like nothing had been like that before. Yeah. Like that game invented like just the mind-blowing nature of it at that time,
and
like,
it repopularized all video games. It's the most important video game ever made.
Number 12 is New Super Mario Brothers Wii with an 87.
See, that one I remember. Like I said, I get these mixed
up.
That
one had the
head.
Red box.
That was the first one that had the four-player.
In the bubbles, exactly. Because New Super Mario Brothers on DS was like revolutionary and awesome. Yeah. That was such a cool thing for
when
them to
introduce.
When
it brought back 2D Mario, which we didn't think was going to happen.
Which is like so funny because now we're all like, oh, stop with the 2D Mario. But like at the time, it was really cool. But then the Wii one, like that's the one I remember playing like in college because I was like as a four-player like local co-op game, it was amazing.
Yeah, my wife and I played it.
And so many games have stolen that bubble mechanic. Like Rayman shamelessly stole that in like Rayman Legend.
And I also, it's one of those things where you can't trust gamers to want what they think they want. Like for decades, people have been like, just let us both play together. But then you're bopping into each other and you're like, get out. Like it's not actually that fun. Like it's fun in like a chaotic way, but it's never like the ideal. Like we just all learned that, this is actually not fun really to progress through this game in the same way that it is played by yourself.
All those new Super Mario games really streamlined how a 2D Mario game works, that I think to its detriment, they add three coins, which are cool because you explore and there's secrets and the levels are to solve, right? And you're getting to the end of the level, but they're not XY levels. They're just one long level. Yeah. You get through it fast. There may be a little bit of an extra area to explore or a path, but like compare that to Mario World or Super Mario Brothers 3, where it's like each world just like can sprawl in one direction you don't expect.
Yeah, because Mario World is like the secret exits and like
I think those games like really simplified and ruined Mario for this era.
Well, and I think the biggest sin of the 2D games is just their art is kind
of. And the 3D models. They're so bad.
I don't like the 3D models either.
I was going to say abhorrent, which is too strong. Wow.
I love that art style. I want,
It's
so generic. It looks like a shovelware.
I was so excited when they put it in Link Between Worlds. Like, I was hoping they were going to do. Because they did Link Between Worlds, they did new Yoshi's story, and they did new Super Mario Brothers. I wanted new Super Metroid so badly. Like, I'm obviously glad that we got the Samus Returns remake, but man, I wanted that like 3D sprite, 2D gameplay so bad.
I think if new Super Mario Brothers,
Samus Returns is.
Yeah. I mean,
DS
more or less.
In particular, the first new Super Mario Brothers, this one you just named, right?
New Super Mario Brothers Wii.
The DS one, you know, had Mini Mario and it had secrets that had a whole secret world and secret exits. Like, that game's really clever.
That game's incredible,
The platforming in that game, I think, it's right up there with World Mario 3, in my opinion. You know, Sam, sounds like you disagree, but the art...
You're talking about the DS one.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first one.
People like that one better.
I can't get past the generic art. There's no style or...
Yeah. And we were all upset at the world map when it came out, too.
That's my Mario. Nothing but respect for my Mario.
It's not like a cool island chain you explore. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
Number 11 is Super Mario Maker.
Ooh, yeah. You know what? Like, I feel like this game, it is so unfortunate that it was trapped on the Wii U and that the 3DS version is as limited as it is, because for so long I was going home and just doing 100 Mario challenge. Like, I would go home and just play random levels, and like, I loved Little Big Planet. I loved Mod Nation Racers. Like, I like games with a creative element. Even though I'm not creative, I just like playing other people's stuff.
I'm there with you.
And man, some of like the cool like speedrun mechanics people made with Mario Maker, and some of like the cool the before Mario Maker was official, there was that old like
pinball
super hard. No, there's like a Mario, like a custom emulation PC tool that people used to make super hard. Kozai or something.
I can't remember the name of it, but we used to watch YouTube videos of like these levels that people make, which are just like,
I mean, there's Kaizo Mario.
Kaizo, yeah,
but they were made by hand.
Yeah, yeah, but like that's what I mean. Like it used to be like that, and like those are still probably better than any Mario Maker, but this is the closest approximation to that, and it's so cool.
Add it to the list of games I can't wait to be reannounced for Switch. Like,
oh my god, yes.
And it's on 3DS with no
sharing. Yeah, but the 3DS one, like, it misses all the online components and everything's random. You can't like pick a set level.
That's a bad
idea. I don't think that would count as my Super Mario series. I know it's Super in the name, but if Super Mario Paint was Super, would that be included?
It's not. It's Mario.
It's Mario Paint.
I know. I'm just saying.
At number 9, Superman 64.
It's Super Mario Kart.
Is Super Mario Kart included?
No, it's not. It's not one of the platformers.
This isn't the brothers. I don't know.
This is the plumbing series. You're talking about the race driving series.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Number 10 is New Super Mario Brothers DS, the original one. It has an 89.
Underrated game.
Craig Harris of IGN said, before New Super Mario Bros. Entered my life, Yoshi's Island was, to me, the greatest platformer ever created. Mm. That title may now have to go to New Super Mario Bros.
Whoa. I think...
Disagree.
I was so ready to defend this game, that might be a little... like, that might be a little extreme.
I mean, I'm telling you, if that game had Mario World-style art, it would be beloved as like as a classic.
Or a map screen, or... There's a bunch of things it's missing, right?
It was such an early DS game, too. Like, that wasn't... Or was it... I remember playing that. No, I guess it was post DS Lite, actually. Yes, it was pretty far along. Yeah.
Super Mario 64 DS.
Yeah.
That was really
that thumb strap.
Here we go. The final nine, we get into the 90s. The top nine highly rated Super Mario games of all time. Number nine is Super Mario 3D Land on 3DS. Yes.
That one, 3D World perfected it, but. Man, 3D Land, another one at the time, I was like, it blew my mind that that sold me on 3D on the 3DS, and it was so far along. That was the first game I played in 3D.
The 3D was 3D great. Land,
I don't think the 3DS is like an ideal place to play a 3D platformer, because the controls.
I like 3D Land more than 3D World. I wonder if I'm alone in that.
I think you're alone in that.
Number eight is Super Mario Sunshine. That is a 92.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I'm surprised that's that high.
I'm surprised it's like high... It's that much higher above so many other Mario.
It's definitely sort of the like forgotten sibling in that like because like when you compare that to like 64 and
but now
Galaxy,
Odyssey is in that it's a Sunshine sequel.
Yeah,
as it should be.
I think Sunshine. I also think that was the first Mario since Mario 64. Like we get Mario games all the time now. Like we're in a really wonderful time for that. But that wasn't always the case. Like it was like 6 years between them. I think
what
64 Odyssey and Sunshine.
Odyssey and Sunshine.
Excuse me, Sunshine and 64 is what I meant.
Yeah, 90.
Anyway, there was this big gap, and so I think critics.
That sounds right.
Critics were so hard up for a Mario game that.
The
Metacritic reads a little high to me.
How insane is it that that was the last truly open 3D Mario?
I know.
That seems impossible to me. That's crazy.
Number seven, Super Mario 3D World for the Wii U.
Yeah.
Which I like a lot. Justin doesn't like.
There's funny characters in it.
I was bored.
Cat Mario is in there.
Cat Mario. Yeah. I love Cat Mario.
Strange noise just occurred.
You guys heard that too, right?
Yeah. Tied for number five are Super Mario World and 64.
Nice.
Those both have a 94.
Amazing.
64.
Now, like, what's above those two?
Well,
Super Mario 64 is my second favorite game of all time.
Yeah, who is rating these? So the average ended up 94. Either everybody gave it a 94, or some people gave it a 90.
Or a 90.
Yeah.
Number four is Yoshi's Island.
Wow.
Too high.
96. You think that's...
I love Yoshi's
World,
Island.
Is World better than...
Yeah, I would never put
World
Yoshi's Island above...
World and 64 are both better than
Yoshi's
Island.
I agree with that.
This is a really arbitrary list because it doesn't include the Yoshi's Island sequels.
That's true.
They don't have Super Mario title.
That barely did.
Tied for number two are both Galaxies. Galaxy and Galaxy 2 both have a 97.
I mean, it's the eternal debate, right? Like, all other things being equal, Galaxy 2 is better, right? Like, more interesting hub world, and but, like, it just doesn't feel like it felt like a really fancy expansion pack. Right?
Yeah.
So it's always really tough. Like, anytime you're in a situation where you have to try to put one above the other, it's like, you know, you can't really do it.
Also, I realized I said New Yoshi's Story earlier. I meant New Yoshi's Island.
You know what
I apologize.
You
mean.
It's okay. And of course, that leaves number one.
SNES 3.
Mario 3.
Super Mario Bros. 3. So
and IGN gave that the number one game of all time, right?
I think so.
Yeah
but did. Now it'll switch out.
But then this is a spoiler. We're about to publish the top 10 Mario games in World.
It's just different groups of people here.
Yeah.
No, so I'm playing. So for years, I'm like, Mario World. Mario World's obviously the best Mario. It's got all the secret exits, it's got a star road, it's got the more skillful flying. But I'm playing through World now in the SNES Classic, and I think I've changed my mind. I think first of all, it's bigger. It's got like 20 or 30 more levels. It feels like you're going on more of an adventure. Like each world is so distinct and unique in a way that Mario World's, I don't know, like Donut Land doesn't feel that different than like Dinosaur Land, whereas like, you know, the Big Island, and like at the end of that game, you have a whole slew of like dark levels with the angry sun, and like World doesn't really feel as epic.
I completely agree. I think World is like a little bit kiddier version of Super Mario Bros.
And World is also easier.
It's
3 has more skillful platforming.
Absolutely.
In it.
I was better secrets.
I was an SNES kid, not an NES kid. Like I never owned my own NES. So like I played like my like first real Mario game was World. And so it's weird because I didn't play 3 until much later. Mm. And so it's interesting because like I came to 3 after having played World. And I think that hurt the way, as a kid, I was like, it doesn't look as good or whatever.
But they're like, I think Raccoon Mario is like the coolest thing ever. Yeah. I really think like Tanuki, all the suits are like super great in that game. And the other game, you get a cap.
Yeah.
I mean,
to be clear, World is Arcade, one of the best, you know, 2D platformers ever made. It's just for me, it's probably no one listening cares, but for me, like, World being better than 3 is like a part of my like gamer identity. That's like an opinion I've held on to for decades.
Now you're having to question your whole idea.
Yeah. Like, I think like I need to go back and play 3 now, because I haven't played either of these games in like a decade, you know? So now I need to go back and play 3. But
what makes them both great, though, is that you can fly, and that's a major part of the game.
Yeah.
And seriously, the levels break when you fly them, and it's so cool. Yeah. What they hide in the ghost houses and World is just as clever as anything in 3. Yeah.
And 3 is a whole world where you go up into the clouds.
Yeah.
Go on a big adventure in there and come back down. Like World,
you start in a world and then you go in the clouds.
Yeah, World just doesn't have as much stuff like that. 3 also has feel that as wild or adventurous.
There's also those arcane conspiracy theories about 3 being like a show like that doesn't actually take place.
Yeah, it's like a stage play. Yeah. I mean, I don't think that's a conspiracy theory. I think that's super true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Each level ends with you coming off stage.
What's the conspiracy about? Like a set. When you beat Mario World in that special way, why does everything get weird masks and change?
Yeah, it's weird.
Is crazy.
It's the strangest twist.
And there's the different colored Yoshis. I will give World credit for having weird arcane secrets in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Any actual keys with keyholes.
Yeah, it's great.
Love that stuff.
Well, we are only 2 weeks away from the next Super Mario game.
Yeah, we're all taking a month off work to play it.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I am so, like, I think there are Mario people and there are Zelda people. And it's like, I think, gun to my head, I'm more of a Zelda person than a Mario person, but just barely. Like, there's nothing, like, having a new Mario game coming is so exciting to me. And I put 200 plus hours into Zelda already. Like, I'm so excited to do that in a new Mario.
I became less of a Zelda person every game after Wind Waker, probably, until Breath of the Wild.
And Breath of the Wild put me back, yeah. I mean, I think, like, I'm such an insane completionist. I'm so excited to get all those weird power moons.
It'll probably be more fun than the Korok.
I will say.
I agree. It'll definitely be more fun than the Korok.
I played the Odyssey demo 3 times now, maybe. You know, once at E3 and twice at Comic-Con. And Mario's movement, I have a hard time getting him to do what I want him to do. Like, just odd.
You need a jetpack.
It's really hard for me to articulate.
I can recommend a game for you.
It doesn't feel quite as like tight as like in a Super Mario 64. It feels a little bit looser and a little bit floatier.
So, I'm sure we have a speedrunner on staff, Mark, who's actually working on a piece that'll go up shortly after this episode about speedrunning Mario 64. He says that Odyssey is slower. That Mario is physically slower in that game.
I do think like the spaces.
What's up with that?
I mean, it is. It's going back to that sunshine.
Is he holding down the B button?
there is a run button. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think in Odyssey, I don't know, the minute I picked up the controller at E3, like from second one, I was just like, I'm going to do triple jump. And I did triple jump. And I was like, this game's perfect. Because it's like, it. I don't know, at least for me, having not played Mario 64 in a long time, it felt spot on.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's hard. You know, the demo, for people that don't know, is a 10-minute time demo. Then it ends and kicks you out. And then, you know, if there's not someone in line behind you, you can play again. So 10 minutes is in a loud, crowded environment. Not a great way to experience a game. I'm sure I'm going to get it and after 30 minutes be adjusted. But
did they let you do it with the Pro Controller? Because I did one round of the Pro Controller.
Did you go to the room where we all played together?
Yeah.
I don't think we ever told that story. It's kind of a cute E3 story, but we got as many people as possible into a room at E3 because like we have appointments, we can play with Nintendo, and I think it was for like 4 people, but at least 20 IGN people showed up. Video, all these people that just wanted to play Mario, and the lines are too long, so they brought us upstairs and Miyamoto's like just sitting in a room right there, right? When you go upstairs behind the scenes, and they got all of IGN people, they let us all sit on the floor and like one of their little meeting rooms.
That's cute.
And on the couches and chairs, and then they could barely close the door. It was like super hot in there. And then everybody just passed the controller around for like 2 minutes play sessions. The whole staff
was that the was split Joy-Con?
No, it was I think it was a Pro Controller.
So I do think playing on split Joy-Cons, and like it's hard for me to play games that way, even though it's the exact same as when the controller's brought together. Like this just feels more natural than this. And that is the way I played at all my demos. Mm-hmm. So that may actually be why the game felt a little weird to me.
And the weird thing for me is like I have never, my Joy-Cons have never come off of my Switch. Like I play it like it's a Vita.
Same.
Like so I want to play it that way because I've played it every way but that. I played the Pro Controller and I played split Joy-Con.
That's what like the Switch, I keep having these like moments, these like light bulb moments where it's like, oh yeah, this console's portable. Because I'm playing Picross right now, but it doesn't feel revolutionary that's a portable game I can take wherever. Like I haven't had that feeling of like, I can't believe I'm playing this on the go since Zelda. Like, because like Stardew Valley doesn't give me that
feeling.
What about
Mario Rabbids?
Like, I didn't play that.
Yeah, Mario Rabbids probably gave
me
that feeling.
Like, Steam World didn't give me that feeling. Like, those are all excellent games, but they don't feel remarkable to be taking with you. And so,
and they were on portable platforms already.
And so I'm excited for Mario to bring that feeling back of like that magic of like, I'm getting the same experience on the go.
I think Kart and Rabbids do that too, but yeah, that's a really good point. It's absolutely an amazing console game to have on your Christmas travels or whatever.
I mean,
year.
Nothing has topped Zelda yet in the holy crap, this is portable realm, and I think Mario might finally be the one that like makes you, hey, by the way, you have this on the go.
I can't wait to play Skyrim. I think that's
that's a good point, actually. Really quick, I know we're running along on this. I just want to give a shout out. There's nothing to do with anything but to Golf Story, which is I am right at the end. Story. I'm so close to beating it. I'm like at the final tournament, and that game, like, it's been my buddy on the last few flights I've taken. I just love it. It's such a charming, good game.
Wait, you like Earthbound, but you also like Golf Story?
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's weird.
I still need to play Golf Story.
You would love it.
Speaking of upcoming Switch games, we have a release date for Doom.
Yay.
That arrives on Switch on November 10th.
Scoop.
$60.
Is it $60? I didn't see that, but
it's also isn't it like a week before Skyrim?
Yep.
Well, so I wanted to point out, so of course we're getting Mario on October 27th, but then the releases are going to continue into November because November 10th with Doom is the same day we get Snipperclips Plus.
Ooh.
But then Sonic Forces is on November 7th
with Persona 5 DLC, even in the Switch version.
What's the
LA Noir arrives on November 14th.
Literally forgot that was coming.
Yeah. And then there's Skyrim on the 17th,
and then on the 1st is Xenoblade.
On the 1st of December is Xenoblade,
God.
Sonic forces his way into stores.
Yeah.
Did you get that press release yet?
No, it's coming, promise. I'm excited for Spider-Man to swing his way into PS4 next year, too.
Yep.
Man, that's so, like, it's almost like be careful what you wish for, because, like, with Wii U, I was like, literally give me any game. And now with Switch, I'm just like, there are too many games.
Have you played Stardew Valley?
No, I need to.
Dude, you got to get it on Switch. If you miss that game on PC and, like, other PS4.
I want it.
Is that a retail package? Do you know?
Stardew?
Yeah.
No, they said it's coming later. It's only physical right now.
Well, I'm guessing they said that they were looking into it.
I think they'll do limited run.
I'm excited for that. Ooh, that'd be cool. That'd be a good one.
And then coming late this month to PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Steam is a collection of 3 8-bit point-and-click adventure games that I can't even believe are being collected and released on.
And they were developed by the same studio?
Yeah, they were all developed from the same studio back in the day. So we've talked about Shadowgate a lot recently here on GameScoop.
Strangely.
That was a 20 Questions game recently. It was one of my favorite games from my childhood. Mm-hmm. And now, I can't believe it, they're making an 8-bit adventure anthology. Mm-hmm. And it is coming out this month on PS4, Xbox One, and Steam. It includes Shadowgate, Deja Vu, and Uninvited.
The people have spoken.
I mean,
I feel like this was a joke press release someone just sent to you.
Yeah.
So Deja Vu had a cover in Nintendo Power. Remember that one?
I mean, I can't believe there's been a whole cover on it.
The Uninvited, I don't really know what that is.
It's the same type of point. You move your cursor around the screen, click on objects, say open door, pick up axe, use axe on the skeleton. I mean, it's a collection of 3 NES.
I mean,
cool that these NES games are coming to PS4 and Xbox One.
That's really cool. I don't want to bag on this collection, like it's super cool, but if it's $10, even that's almost too much to pay for like 3 NES games that people aren't really asking for.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like, I would love to put a list together of the Nintendo games, because like there's like so many in Rare Replay that came to Xbox One, and
Disney
then there
Afternoon.
Was like Disney Afternoon, there's those Star Wars games that if you pre-ordered Battlefront on PS4, Super you got Super Nintendo. Star Wars.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's there's really like
cool.
There's
Super Star Wars came to PlayStation, which was like the weirdest thing.
Yeah, that's really, I just find it fascinating how many like Nintendo versions of games have made their way to like other consoles.
Shadowgate is so cool. Times. You are exploring this like mysterious castle all by yourself, and you carry a torch with you, and your torch is always running out of flame. You have to relight it, or else you're going to be in the dark. And literally, it's a point-and-click adventure game where you have to fumble around in the dark. And there's all these cool monsters that you encounter, and the game has kind of a morbid sense of humor. They'll kill you in really like fun ways and kind of laugh at you. And it has an awesome soundtrack. So if you have never checked out Shadowgate, this will be a really cool way to do it.
I'm excited. The DSi shop is going offline, by the way, pretty soon. Wow. Or no, not DSi, excuse me.
The Wii
eShop.
The Wii eShop is going offline.
The virtual console.
And, I bring it up because you mentioned like Nintendo games that are spread all around, but like more fascinating to me, I've talked about on the show before, is games that are like kind of trapped on like one platform. Like, you know, Aladdin on the Genesis or Super Nintendo will never be in any game collection ever again because, you know, one company developed it and another one published it based off a Disney property, and like no one really owns that.
Well, Disney Afternoon anymore. Collection did just happen.
Yeah,
but I know your point that you're making, and there's stuff.
Sure, I shouldn't say never, but there's definitely games that, you know, whether for legal reasons they're trapped or just because there's not a lot of interest. Like, there are games that are exclusive to the Wii eShop that when that shuts down, they're just gone.
I know. Like, maybe we'll get like a Wii eShop collection, like, in 20 years.
Some of them are like small weird indie games, but there's like Castlevania Adventure. And I loved Final Fantasy: My Life as a King.
Oh yeah,
I love that game too,
man.
And they made a sequel, My Life as a Dark Lord. There was a Blaster Master before the Switch one.
Yep. I'm so mad that Nintendo just hasn't put out Virtual Console. Just put it out with all that stuff.
I think they did a Gradius game too, from that, like a Rebirth. There were several Konami Rebirth games on there.
We need to do
Konami Rebirth. That's right. That was a series. Yeah, Castlevania Rebirth and Gradius Rebirth.
I think Jeremy Parrish or someone already did this, but we need to do a feature on like download these games.
Jeremy did that at Retronauts. It's really cool because there's all these like tweaked Japanese games that shouldn't have ever had an audience here, and they somehow got on the Virtual Console. It's so good. Love that. Good work, Jeremy, if you're listening.
It happened once.
He's not.
It's on Retronauts.
I have to imagine it'll happen again.
Yep.
They'll come back again on Switch eventually.
Probably not.
Fingers crossed.
Games are all going away unless they're like have loot boxes or
that's true.
Some kind of online.
Yeah, they're gonna make them a games as a service thing.
Yeah,
you can buy Torch Fuel for Shadowgate.
Konami's like, we need to make the Destiny of Gradius.
I would play that.
an 8-bit Destiny.
Hey, if you make an 8-bit Destiny,
that's actually that.
I'm suddenly coming around on this whole canceled Star Wars idea.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Wait. It's that knocking. It must be the listeners from last week.
Bar the door.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Eric in Wisconsin did. And he said, hey, guys, been listening for about a year now, and I don't think I've heard you guys talk about the Vita at all. Now, that's not true. We have talked about the Vita here and there. Usually it's as a punchline to some joke, but still, we have at least mentioned
it. I put like 100 hours in my Vita this year.
That's why Andrew's on this week.
He says, I had bought a Vita at launch for MLB The Show and the promise of Final Fantasy 15 on the go. Oh, I'm sorry. It says 10. Final Fantasy 10 on the go.
Oh,
but that
weird.
Actually came out, didn't it?
Yeah, that came out. 10-2.
My Vita fell victim to the Wii U and then the Switch. I'm looking to get back into playing it as I'm going to be traveling a fair amount for work soon and want to take something with me besides the Switch. I currently own Spelunky, MLB 15, Final Fantasy 10, Hot Shots Golf, and Assassin's Creed Liberation.
Oh, yeah.
What are some other great games you guys would recommend on the Vita?
Persona 4 Golden.
Yep.
Number one for sure.
That's the reason to...
That's a gigantic RPG you can play forever.
It's this weird, like, so a lot of Vita games that are coming came to PS4 as well. So, like, I put, like, 40 hours in Danganronpa 3 on Vita, but you can play that on PS4.
Is that the Danganronpa you'd recommend?
You have to play 1 and 2 to play 3.
Okay.
But those games are fantastic. They're so weird and funny and just awesome. And there's still stuff coming. Like, the Persona dancing games are still coming. Mm-hmm. There's a very small sliver of life left in that thing.
Do you do our top 25 Vita list?
I usually contribute, but I think we killed it. Yeah.
No, yeah.
And so, was up there? I mean, Uncharted has a game on it, but I wouldn't recommend it.
No, that I think that Uncharted game's great.
Gold Abyss.
It's better than Uncharted 1.
I was kind of tainted because I did a really tough strategy guide for that. It was hard to find.
It's those games, Assassin's Creed Liberation and Uncharted Golden Abyss. I wish you could like patch it out, but like they have very gimmicky early Vita stuff where like you're required to
pinch the screen from,
or
like,
you hold them up to the light to prove that like the camera can. There's like so much weird stuff.
Just like DS did.
Tearaway is amazing. It is such an. It is the only game on Vita that is built entirely from the ground up for Vita in a way that doesn't feel gimmicky. It is really smart. Yeah, and then they put it on PS4. That version, fine, but it's not as like magical as like Tearaway. It's not like a spoiler, I guess, but like the way, like when you start that game, you're only using about half of the commands in the Vita, and the way it slowly reveals more of the Vita's functions to you and opens them up is so smart and cute. Me and Molecule Man, they really get it.
If you like turn-based strategy games, I would recommend Disgaea 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's another game you can spend a lot of time with.
Also, the Vita is the it's by far the secret best way to play PS1 games. You can get any PS1 classics.
Yeah, Metal Gear is supposed to be really good.
Final Fantasy 7, like the original version. Well,
good call.
I mean,
good
speaking
call.
Of games, you know, going away or coming back, there were games that were gone forever and then came back, but they're only on like Vita and PS3.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I want to play Suikoden 2, like so bad, but there's not a PS4 version. And so it's like, well.
Yeah, for people looking for Persona 3, Vita's probably a really smart way to play Persona 3 Portable.
Is the Little Big Planet on Vita any good?
Little Big Planet's great. We actually gave it Vita Game of the Year over Persona 4 Golden the year they both came out, which is a very controversial
choice
in IGN history. Yeah, it's rough.
I would recommend both SteamWorld Dig and SteamWorld Heist.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those are on Vita.
Yeah, Gravity Rush, I mean, you should play it on PS4 because it's better, but if you want to play in the go, it's a perfectly great way to play.
I love Gravity Rush 2 so much. I need to go back to Gravity Rush.
And he said he already has Spelunky. Andrew and I are both big Spelunky fans. But I would also
Rogue Legacy. Yeah.
Which is another awesome
Love that game.
Game's so good portable. Yeah, also Downwell is a really, really good. It's probably better on mobile, but it's really, really good on Vita.
All right,
that was a good list.
Yeah, there you go.
Good work, everybody.
I mean, I have hundreds more. I think the Vita, the library
I love the Vita.
Hundreds is an exaggeration.
I love the Vita.
I think hundreds is lowballing it. I think
of games you love on the Vita.
Yeah, all of the best.
That's impossible. All right, we're gonna write these out after
if
this.
If hundreds is lowballing it, the only thing left is thousands.
I think
of games you love on the Vita.
Of games that
I think you're gonna
loved.
Run out in the '40s.
You can go to a GameStop right now and get a refurbished fat Vita for $79, and you have access to hundreds of great games.
But you could buy a new one.
For like $150. Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, you can trade in three PS4 games and get a refurbished Vita.
And the Vita's the only console I didn't buy.
And now Sony's just going to publish all those games on the Switch anyway.
Yeah, apparently.
I think in a long time.
This is Michael from Canada, and Canada has an exclamation point.
Canada!
Canada!
He says, I love the high level of educational talks on GameScoop, and I've learned I've learned quite a bit of video game history, and it's fun listening to you guys discuss the hottest topics going on right now.
Yeah, like airport firefighters.
And makes my work days go by a little bit faster.
Makes our work go by faster, too.
Yeah, that's true. He says, my question to you guys is, do you think it's mandatory to play the first game of a series, or is it beneficial to play the first installment of a series? I bring this up because lately there have been some sequels to games, Evil Within 2 and the upcoming Wolfenstein. I found myself wanting to play the new Wolfenstein game, but have never played any of the other games in the series. Do you think it's ever a good idea to jump into a game on the second or third installment and just watch a recap video of the previous titles?
I actually really struggle with that personally. Like, there's franchises that I'd like to get into that, you know, I feel like I need to go back and struggle through the first, like, slightly less great games in order to get to the one that everybody really loves. Not just because, you know, of story continuity or whatever, because as you say, you know, you can watch YouTube to catch up on that. Yeah. But just to see, you know, the evolution of the mechanics and the new ideas and see them sort of layer on, you know, the progression of that game in the studio. But then inevitably I give up, like, halfway through, you know, the mediocre game that's now 8 years old. And then I never even get to, like, the game that I wanted to play in the first place. I'm a little bit, like, I have a pile of shame of just dozens of games that I haven't gotten through for that. That's the cycle that I go through with video games.
I would say it depends heavily on how story-based the game is. Because, like, so in the case of Wolfenstein 2, I actually probably would recommend you go back and play the first one. Because this is a direct sequel to the story of the first game. But, like,
and strangely, like, the strongest thing about that game was the story.
Yeah, well, the gunplay is really fun too. But in the case of, like, Assassin's Creed Origins, I think you can just jump right in there.
Yeah,
play that game.
But it would have been hard to jump into, like, the other Assassin's Creeds before Origins.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
Well, so I think it's like anything else, right? It's like TV shows are the same way. There are TV shows that are just, you know, episodic. Like, no one is like, you need to watch the first 19 seasons of Law & Order before you can watch season 20. But at
wait a minute. Who are these guys? Yeah. What's going on here?
But if you jump into Breaking Bad season 3 without having seen 1 and 2, you're going to be like, what? And so I think, like, you just have to, I think you nailed it. Like, for games that are super, super story heavy, play the story.
I mean, I started Metal Gear with Metal Gear Solid 4, and I was like, this is stupid, and it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It didn't hurt my interpretation of the game.
I would never be able to, like, Metal Gear is a weird example because I have played that franchise over the years, but I would have to go back and start mm-hmm. with Metal Gear Solid. Oh, if
I were to what about The Witcher? I never played the other two Witcher
games. I had to play Witcher 1 and 2 first. I'm like that's how I am with games. Like I feel too weird starting with like 3.
Or like Skyrim, I never played the other games.
Well, yeah, see, I did make an exception for Elder
GTA,
Scrolls.
I never played
one
and
Final 2. Fantasy games you don't need like they're standalone, you know,
never
you
played all the Red Dead.
I would recommend you play through earlier Uncharted games before jumping into Uncharted 4.
100%, yeah.
But I feel like you could just play Resident Evil 7 without ever having played a Resident Evil before that.
Yeah.
For sure.
There are at least 10 games that I'd like to play that I won't play because I feel like there's too much pressure for me to go back and play the earlier games.
I'm trying to think
Rock
of something
Band 3 without having played Rock Band 1 and 2.
Sam and Justin and I have all been playing a lot of Shadow of War. I don't think you've been playing it, have you, Andrew?
No, not yet.
Would you guys say people should play the first game before they play the second one?
Maybe just play one or the other.
I mean, I am playing Shadow of War and finding the story and plot completely incomprehensible. So I don't know whether that means, like, I played the first and I find the sequel incomprehensible. So
I comprehend it. I just think it's bad.
I don't understand.
We've talked about that in like 3 episodes.
Why I'm
now.
Doing what I'm doing. Yeah, it's really or who goofy. I'm taking missions from or why care. Like,
did
none
get,
of it.
Did
makes
you get the tree lady yet?
Oh, I did the tree lady last night. I hated that part.
None of it
I
makes
actually really
sense.
Liked, I really
to
liked
me.
The game, but that character was
Damon,
so annoying.
Damon likes the game, and, you know, Dan gave it an 8.5. They both like the game
I
much
think
more.
Dan gave
it
a 9, didn't he?
Oh, maybe he did. He really liked it.
It's in the 9s.
Yeah. I don't think that game.
It's because there's a bunch of, a lot of games have this problem. There's a bunch of stupid stuff because it's a video game.
Yeah.
That happens. And then the good part of it is like really appealing to people that like that type of game. And Dan really liked that part. I really like the part I'm in now. But man, I can ignore all that other stuff. But it did take hours of my life, which I'm a little bit resentful about.
Orcs are completely non-threatening. Like you can just bolt away from them. Like they can't. You can run right by them at any time. Like
and they play guitar apparently.
And that's not even a joke. They play the lute.
Yeah, you mean the general.
Yeah.
The general orcs, yeah. But you even get things that make it so you upgrade it and you just can completely.
Like the game plays it being a stealth game, but there's no. I run by with impunity and they're like, hey, and then I just keep running and there's no consequence at all.
Yeah, it becomes the thing that I like that I'm doing now is that you collect orcs that are good and then you use them in these big battles. And the battles are super funny and cool and it's like a giant melee in this big castle. Yeah. And if you lose the castle, you have to do all the stuff to get it back. Like it's super fun and great.
Yeah.
But like everything that got me there is like totally wasn't worth my time.
I should say I'm 6 hours in maybe. Yeah. And so I haven't even gotten to like, you know, all the stuff that makes this game really unique amongst AAA. Like right now, it's sort of a B- tier action adventure game, but it does have all these cool systems and innovations that set it apart from, you know, other action adventure games that I haven't even really explored them yet.
You should try to at least make it to Act 2 so you can do the recruitment stuff because I do think that part's really cool.
Yeah, and when the orcs refuse your recruitments and they do all these twists,
they gotta be shamed.
It's really funny. And man, there's a lot of dialogue in that game. It just goes on and on and on. Every orc can do so many different things and act so many different ways. I have one that's terrorizing me, and his name is Douche the Maniac. That is not a joke. His name is Douche the Maniac.
How do you spell
that? And he comes back from the dead over and over again. D-U-S-H.
Do the other orcs chant his name
maniac.
When he shows up?
And I shamed him in a way that made him crazy. So now he doesn't even taunt me anymore. Yeah, I was saying this before. He just giggles.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'd let you guys know before that his name is Douche the Maniac.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
I'm going to make him a captain one day.
I'm not giving up on the game yet because I don't think it's awful. I'm just like a little bit bored by it. So I'm gonna keep giving it some shots. But I've decided I'm gonna start skipping cutscenes.
All right. Well, if you hear all the orcs chanting douche, 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 run, just run.
I have a question about the Middle Earth, the Tolkien lore.
Yeah.
Well, it's not going to be answered by this game.
No, it's not.
That's why I'm asking you guys.
No, right. Shelob's normally a spider. And
hey, did you see that Shelob's dress has two straps and then has three straps for her arms and she's like it looks like a spider?
Okay, I have a question about Middle Earth.
Yeah.
Is Middle Earth a country, a continent?
It's a continent.
Is it a planet?
It's a continent.
It's a continent on what planet?
It's unnamed. It might be named Arda. Did I make that up?
Yeah, it's something like that.
Okay. So there are other.
It's not a planet though. It's a flat plane of existence.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And
not a planet.
Valinor was curled up out of the ocean.
Yeah. It's a land,
You can sail to Valinor, but it's like a peel of land up into the air of the ocean.
Tolkien was a flat earther?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Flat middle earther.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay. And that brings us to video game 20 questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Ryan Turford.
Okay. Mm. Where is he from?
He did not say.
Well, then we don't do the game.
Yeah. he's from Middle Earth.
I base everything off of where they're from.
Yeah, Cincinnati, Florida, it really matters.
It really changes.
I like that questions 1 through 19 is just Sam trying to guess where this guy's from.
You're playing on hard mode today.
Are you serious? Are we actually playing on hard mode?
Let the questioning
begin. Is that a clue?
Does this game have multiplayer?
No.
Why would you start with that?
Mind your own business. Go back to Beyond.
It eliminates. Beyond. What do you think? I think it eliminates like 20% of all games. So now we're down to 80% of the totality of games.
Did this game come out? Wait, what is it? January 1st, 2000? Is that thing? Did this game come out before January 1st, 2000?
Yes.
Did it come out before 1990?
No.
90s game.
Told you what to study. Saturn.
Damn it, you were
Dreamcast,
totally right too.
And
did this game come out in the 16-bit era?
Well, what is the 16-bit era?
Did this game come out during the Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis era?
Are we allowed to ask era questions?
I think you need years.
I need a more specific, because there's like a lot of overlap. And
it's like when you ask Siri, like, find me food, and she's like, what kind of food do you want?
Did it come out on a 16-bit console?
You know it came out in the 90s, but the Genesis came out in 89, so I don't know.
This game come out on a 16-bit console?
No.
Okay. It could be a 16-bit handheld.
Well, I don't know how many bits the handheld.
Is this a handheld game?
No.
Why are you doing this?
It seemed a little unnecessary, but
why? GBA and Game Boy are both not 16-bit consoles.
Does that mean... Damon, you.
It's not on Game Boy, Game Boy Advance, Super Nintendo, or Genesis. So it's probably on Saturn, PlayStation,
that
Nintendo 64, PlayStation 1.
Did this game come out after 1995?
No.
Okay.
Is it a late PC? Did this game come out? I mean, it's PC or arcade.
Sega CD, 32X.
Are there any 90s NES games
Late NES games? That's unlikely.
We had one last week.
Yeah. Did this game come out on PC?
No.
What? Well, okay.
Last week was Odama.
Tell us what game this came out.
Did this game come out on NES?
Yes.
Okay. Late NES game.
Yeah.
Right, Yoshi.
Yoshi. Wario.
Wario's Woods.
Yoshi's Cookie.
Is this game made by Nintendo?
No.
Mega Man 6.
Mm-hmm. Could be the Mega Mans.
I don't know,
but I was referring to Little Nemo. That was one in the 90s before.
I don't know.
So wait, 90 to 95 NES.
Yeah.
In here.
I mean,
no multiplayer.
Not made by Nintendo.
Mm-hmm. Is the developer still in business today?
And you said this is after 90.
Andrew asked, is the developer still in business today? The answer is yes. That's 10.
Is this game a sequel?
No.
Well, not Mega Man.
We're on 11? Should we ask if it has sequels?
Yeah.
All right. Does it have sequels?
No.
Damon.
We're boned.
Wait. NES game not made by Nintendo.
Not a sequel.
Do we establish it's after January 1st, 1990?
Yeah.
Yes.
But before January 1st, 1995?
Yes. On the NES.
So that's not really late NES. That's like 1990 was a major NES year.
Well.
Mario Brothers 3 came out in 1990.
Well, fair enough. Not a first party game. No sequels. Is not a sequel itself.
Is it based on a license?
Good question.
Yes.
Good question.
TMNT2, the arcade game.
Yeah, but it's a sequel. Well, sort of.
That's a good point.
Well,
that's a good point. The first one I went to was the wrong one. So Talesman, DuckTales, all those.
Yeah, DuckTales.
Darkwing Duck.
Is it based off a Disney brand?
No.
Okay. It's not Little Nemo.
Rambo.
Yeah, there's lots of cool licenses from that. RoboCop 3, that's a sequel though.
Batman?
Batman was an 89 by Sunsoft. I don't think they're around anymore.
89.
I was saying before we came in here that I'm so good at GameScope, and I'm so bad at Twitter. Like, I always end up sitting here silent or just making goofs.
Well, what are some...
Sorry, guys.
Think of things you watched in that era that might have been a license. There's so many. There's like Indiana Jones games. There's all kinds of crap.
Maybe you should invite me and then not let me in the room again. There's,
okay, so no sequels. It's not a sequel. It's a one-off licensed game.
Yeah.
It'd be California Raisins. That never came out, though.
Cool spot.
Yeah. Should we try to get the developer? You said it's still around?
I mean, I kind of want to know. I feel
it's, like... Did we not... ask if it's a Japanese game?
No.
We did. Did we?
Does it matter? Should we just ask if it's Konami and Capcom and get lucky?
It doesn't help me. I mean, if it helps
I think
you.
It's worth burning two questions on, is it Konami and is it Capcom?
No, I would ask Japanese, probably.
Is it a Japanese game?
No.
So it's not Ultra, et cetera.
I think we got a turret on our hands. That sounds like a bad game. Maybe the Karate Kid.
Ooh.
Maybe Jaws.
Ooh, Jaws. Yeah. Jaws.
Jaws is pretty solid.
Who developed Jaws? Dude. It is crazy plausible that this is Jaws.
I just love how it, if it was a licensed game not made by Japan, it's just got to be terrible.
Oh, man.
Is it based off of a movie license?
Yes.
Oh, God. All right. So
Jaws
we got,
is looking good.
Yeah, it's looking real good.
Can we ask if the film was directed by Steven Spielberg?
I feel like it came out before 1990, though.
Yeah, I think
But that's
so
just
too.
A feeling. And then who made it?
Oh, I mean, it could have been like a crazy early like Activision game, right?
Mm-hmm.
It could have been, you know, any of them, any of those.
So what movies came out in 1990? It's going to be based on Jaws. I mean, I know they didn't come out that year. There's an Indiana Jones game.
Ghostbusters.
There's, that was before. Two. It's 86. It's not a sequel. There's Back to the Future.
Back to the Future 2.
Gremlins 1 and 2. But all those were eliminating by the sequel.
The sequels. Yeah, exactly. Was there a Jaws 2 game?
But so here's the question.
And then there's Goonies 2.
But wait.
But that's not... Sequel to that.
Philosophical question. Gremlins movie comes out, you make a Gremlins video game. Gremlins 2 movie comes out, you make a Gremlins 2 video game. Mm-hmm. Would you call that video game a sequel?
I mean, for the purpose of this game, yes.
I don't
then
know.
Like, then
it's an adaptation.
Like, yeah, as you said, there's like Rambo, there's Die Hard.
Die Hard.
What year did Die Hard come out?
Yeah, but Die Hard surely got sequels.
And who made it? Is this based on an, should we say animation or action movie?
I don't, I'm eating.
Does that help at all? Is this based on a live action movie, maybe?
I mean, what animated movies are there? Because we know it's not Disney.
Yeah.
I'd like the Spielberg thing.
What about the action movie? Just like, just to narrow down, or horror?
Or
whatever?
You could try going in the franchise direction. You could ask if there are still movies made in this franchise today. Because that would get you Die Hard.
Does the movie have sequels? Is that what you're saying?
No. Does the movie, like, is the movie still an active franchise today? Because Die Hard is.
I wouldn't say Die Hard is.
There's a new Die Hard movie coming out.
All right. Ask it. You didn't get asked
in a while. No, it's okay.
I like it. I think it's a good question.
We have four questions left.
Oh, that's not enough. Never mind.
Don't yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I like Spielberg because, you know, it's very active in the 80s, and we're like 40% sure it's Jaws.
What are you asking?
Did Spielberg direct the movie in which this game is based?
Burn it.
Is this based off of a Spielberg movie?
No.
Oh!
Three questions
left. He rolled the dice and he lost.
Three questions.
Now I just want to be like, are there dogs?
Hey, there's a Star Wars game for NES too.
There is.
But there's a sequel.
But I thought it was made in Japan, the one where he turns into a squirrel.
There is a Japanese one also that's a different game. All right, so it's a movie game. I mean, it's not Rambo. I think that's
but like Rescuers early. Down Under isn't Disney, is it? Or is it?
That wasn't a game.
It's 100% a game. Maybe not in any.
No, but there's the Little Mermaid, and there's the Lion King.
But we know it's not Disney.
How do we know that?
Do we?
Well, I asked if it was based off a Disney property, and he said,
"Oh,
no.
Okay. Okay. Then why?"
And then later we zeroed in on movie. Because I was thinking DuckTales. That's what really? I asked it. I asked it right after.
I don't
DuckTales.
Remember that Disney question. I don't think you asked that question.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I did. We have it on tape.
All right.
I may not have.
Judges?
Well, you don't have many questions left, so I don't know if you want to.
We only have two left.
Three left. Well, but one of them has to be a guess.
Ask the dogs in it.
Sam, I mean, I want to know if it was like, I don't know what I want to know. Like, if it was like a genre film, like a superhero or like horror or sci-fi.
Yeah. That'd be great. I was going to say action is a genre, right? But like.
Yeah.
But maybe that's too general.
And it's not Jaws.
My worry about asking if you burn one on a genre question, if you're like, is it an action movie? And he goes, no, that doesn't actually help us narrow anything down. And it helps us eliminate stuff. But it doesn't help us narrow it down.
It's almost surely an action movie because otherwise it wouldn't have a video game. Like, it's not going to be a video game adaptation of My Dinner with Andre.
There's Last Action Hero. Oh, Splatoon. Or Platoon, I mean. Not Splatoon.
I love Splatoon.
What year did Platoon come out? Yeah? All right.
I don't know what that means.
I don't either.
I was leaning too close to the mic because I was
getting excited.
I was thinking too hard. Yeah.
Should we?
All right. Three questions.
Is it based on a war movie? Should we do that?
Yeah.
Is it based on a war movie?
No.
Oh.
Okay. Is that what get us?
Based on a war movie.
That's Rambo and so many of those other games.
Hmm.
So we have one more question, then we have to make a guess. So there's The Last Starfighter for sci-fi.
Ooh.
I think that's a little early, though.
I don't want to do superhero because it was really only Batman back then or Superman.
Mm-hmm. Well, there could have been other superhero things that I'm not thinking of. There's a Superman game.
But again,
that's terrible.
Those would have gotten sequels. Any Batman, like there were multiple Batman games. There were multiple Superman games.
There's so many licensed games. Toxic Avengers, Creature from the Black Lagoon. There's X-Men, Silver Surfer. There's just like a million.
Yeah, but not based off, like Silver Surfer's not based off a film.
No, none of them are like film based though.
And it didn't get any sequels. So it's gotta be like an adaptation of some movie from back then.
Oh, you know what would help is if we ask if there are dogs in it.
Why do you think that would help?
No, I just like
no. Which dog movie?
To clarify, when you asked if it had sequels, I meant the video game did not have
sequels. Yeah, no video game sequels, and the video game is not a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
That is correct.
So yeah, I mean, I think this is like a big action series, like Terminator, or RoboCop, or something like that.
What's the RoboCop NES game?
There's three of them.
Okay.
Two, and three. So
doesn't that mean it can't be that?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, the sequel thing, it really trips me up whether the game adaptation of a movie sequel counts as a sequel to the
game. I think that counts. Are you allowed to say if it counts?
Well, we can talk about that philosophically, but let me say that this game has a title, and there was never another game released with this title, too.
Got it.
Gotcha.
That makes sense. So
it's not going to be Back to the Future Part 2 and 3,
yeah,
which is the worst NES card.
Yeah, or there's a Ghostbusters 2, and then there's a Godzilla 1 and 2.
I give up.
Yeah.
It's not a Spielberg.
I don't think I have enough information to make the call on this. There's just so many American-made crap games. But it was made by a company that's still around, and that's a darn good clue.
Is this based off a horror movie?
What American companies are... God.
Yes.
Is it Friday the 13th?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah.
No.
Oh!
Is it Nightmare on Elm Street?
It's Nightmare on Elm Street.
So Friday the 13th might have been a Japanese game, too. So
if this were 21 questions, we would have 100% gotten it.
Nightmare on Elm Street, developed by Rare.
Wow.
Whoa.
Published by LJN in 1990.
This was hard mode.
Yeah.
1990. But LJN. I feel like
What? LJN?
Yeah.
Published by LJN.
So we got screwed by Rare this time.
Did I
still around.
Did I screw it up for us by going rogue on asking Friday the 13th?
We were all thinking Friday the 13th was a Japanese game.
Do you think you would have gotten Nightmare on Elm Street? Sorry.
Well, I would have been wavering about it, but I did guess it on 21. Because Nightmare is a weird NES game.
No, but it doesn't matter if you guessed it on 3. If you guessed already, doesn't it?
I'm not saying we would. I'm just saying I don't think you screwed it. I don't think you screwed us over.
Justin, I think you're great.
One thing I think you guys should have done is thought about what time of year it is. And if you could have gamed the system a little bit if you thought, I really like Halloween
you mean
and
because
horror
Christmas
movies.
Is coming up?
Yeah.
Yeah, but how would we know that you like Famous Monster?
Yeah, I know.
We could have
no any idea.
We could have gotten to horror sooner.
Yeah.
But then we would have thought it was Jaws. So
horror is a pretty unusual genre for an American NES game from 1990 and later.
But kind of not really. We came up with three.
Also, Nightmare is not a series I associate with the 90s at all.
Well, but the first movie was like 84 or 85. So yeah, this was this game arrived late after the movies were that popular, I think.
Yeah, I bet there was a Nightmare in the 90s, early 90s.
Oh, yeah.
I had a Nightmare in the early 90s.
Yeah. Well, there was one with Super Mario Brothers in it.
A Nightmare? What do you mean?
Yeah, there was a Nightmare in Elm Street.
Was using one of the
where he
gags
like puts the kid in like a Super Mario Brothers game.
There's a Nightmare with Johnny Depp in it.
Mm-hmm, the first
one. The first one.
Yeah, I know.
I've never seen any of the first two.
Yeah, I think one and three are good.
Or no, three. I've seen one in Insane Asylum and the first one.
Three is the Insane Asylum.
Okay. Definitely
that one's fun, but it's campy. And the first one's like the only really serious.
I really want to watch them all. I wish those were like the kind of things that would just show up like streaming.
Yeah.
They never are.
Well, they never are.
They try to make money off them.
They never are this time of year, for sure. Yeah, and that's why I was laughing so much when he said, well, it's a licensed game not made by Japan.
Yeah,
so.
The third.
Because, yeah, this game is obviously terrible.
Yeah.
Really bad.
Yep.
Well, better luck next time. Thank you for the suggestion here. What was your name? Ryan Turford.
From Mystery. From Question Mark.
That is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Andrew. Thanks for joining us, Andrew, even though you're very tired.
I am. I
from
went
your
out of Pokemon
exploits in but, Austin.
You finally got the Squirtle?
Yeah, finally. By the time this episode's up, you can read about my weird adventure flying 2,000 miles to catch Pokemon.
You know, I just chose Squirtle as my starting Pokemon.
I didn't even know you could do that.
Sam, is it true that when we walk out of the studio right now, it's possible that Super Mario Odyssey might be in the office?
It's possible.
It's possible.
Oh man, for some reason, I don't know why, but for some reason I thought you were going to say there would be food of some
kind. So did I. I was like,
is it possible there's going to be food outside? Yeah.
There's free sushi today.
That's not something I really want to claim from the break room sitting out all day.
Free sushi, everybody.
Pizza sits like for 2 hours and it's fine. Sushi's not a...
No, it was brought in for talent. Yeah.
That means only Damon's allowed to eat
external talent.
I don't know what external. Anyway, this is really getting off track here. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. That's our show. My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop. We're out. I shook you in my dream as hard as I could stand. When I stopped, you fell away. Pockets full of sand. Waking up a world away. Cutting through the air. 7,000 miles to kill. See you when I'm there. Just look into my eyes. You're watching it decay. Twitching in the net again. Trying to get away. I am living in between the pleasure and the pain. Emblems glowing in the night. Mounting in the rain. I've been modified. I've been modified. Well, I guess it was worth a try. But I've been I've been modified. Well,
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.